Okay.
So, yeah, we are holding by the Mishnah on Chovav Amud Beis. Mishnah says, Halakech Sadeh Me'aviv, a person bought a field from his father. We're still talking about Sadeh Achuzah over here, to find where, if it's, where if the person is Makdish it, and then he doesn't get it, and then he doesn't buy it back from Hekdish by Yovel, then it's going to play him. So he bought a field from his father. Then his father died, so now he is automatically the heir of it anyway. Then he was makdish this field, so he didn't originally get this field in the usual way by a chuzah. He got it by buying it from his father, but at this point, it is a sdei achuzah. So hareik is sdei achuzah. So therefore, it's considered like a sdei achuzah. It still has the regular gene of a sdei achuzah, that if he wants to buy it back from Hekdish, that if anybody wants to buy it back from Hekdish, then it's the usual rate, and that if he doesn't buy it back by Yovel, then it goes to the Kohen. What happened? That part everybody agreed to. But if he was makdish the field, and then while he still had it bought, and then his father died, so now, once his father died, he would have inherited the field, but by this time he was already makdishing. Hareh to stay mikneh, divrei Rav Meir. So Rav Meir says it'll be like a stay mikneh at that point. It's considered like a field that he bought. Therefore, if he's not going to lose it come Yovel, it's going to go back to him, or to be exact, it's going to go back to his father, and then via his father, right back to him, because he, or maybe to him and his brothers collectively, whatever, because they're the heirs, but it's not going to be lost and given to the Kohanim. And it also means that between then and Yovel, if anybody's going to be makdish, if anybody's going to be poded, then they're being poded at regular market value, not at the 50 shloim for 49 years, right? Give Rav Meir, so says Rav Meir. Rav Yehuda and Rav Shimon, Rav Yehuda and Rav Shimon say it's considered like a Sdei Achuzah. Shenema, because the Pasuk says, Im Misdei Miknosei, Asher Loi, Im Es Sdei Miknosei is the actual Lashon HaPasuk, Asher Loi Misdei Achuzah. So if it's a field that he bought, which is not, and the Pasuk continues, which is not a field of his inheritance, implying, why does he have to add that point? Sada She'en Ru'uyah, Lias Sada Achuzah. So Rav Yehuda and Rav Shimon say that implies that this din only applies to a field that was not suitable to be a Sdei Achuzah. In other words, that he bought it. Oh, there he is. Okay.
You know what? I'm not a last minute guy. I like things to be scheduled.
Okay, I sent it several hours ago. Whatever. Okay, we're in the middle now. We're in the middle of a Mishnah. Aaron is on the phone as well. So I was saying that if a person was saying...
You can start over if you want.
Okay.
What?
So if a person bought a field, fine. So we said if a person bought a field, above him days, the Mishnah. A person bought a field from his father, then his father died, then he was makdish the field, then for sure that field was considered a Sdei Achuzah. Everybody agrees to that, because once his father died, he inherited it. If it's the other way around, if he was makdish it first, then his father died, then you have a machlokes. So Meir says it's like a Sdei Mishnah. And Rabbi Hoda and Rabbi Shimon say it's like a Sdei Achuzah. Because the prophet says, "In Mishdei Mishnosei, Asher Loi Mishdei Achuzah." So if it's a field that he bought, which is not a field of his Achuzah, now why do I have to add those words? Obviously, if he bought it, it's not a Sdei Achuzah. The implication is that it means specifically Sodesh. To be a Sdei Achuzah, which if he hadn't bought it, it wasn't a Sdei Achuzah. It belonged in some other family, and he never would have been in line to inherit it. As opposed to in this case, it was Roy to be a Sdei Achuzah, because after all, even if he hadn't bought it from his father, eventually his father would have died, and he would have inherited some part of the field, at least, some part of it, and he and his brothers would have divided up the estate, but he might have gotten this particular field. It could have been his Achuzah. Therefore, that even now, when he actually ended up buying it, it's still a Sdei Achuzah. Okay. Continues the Mishnah. A person buys a field from somebody else. It doesn't go away to the Kohanim in Yovel. Instead, the original owner that he bought it from gets it back. So Reuven had the field. Reuven and his family, Reuven owned the field, which he inherited from his family. I'm trying to learn the word. He sold it to Shimon. Shimon was makdish it. Comes Yovel, it goes back to Reuven. It doesn't go to the Kohanim. She'ainot a makdish davar, she'ainot shalai, because a person can't be makdish something that's not his. It wasn't really Shimon's field in the sense that Shimon himself wouldn't have been able to keep it past Yovel anyway. He would have had to return it to Reuven. So you have a conflict. So a person can't be matched to something that's not his elsewhere. In other places, the Gemara has an expression, "Ma mocha rishon l'sheni kol tchus shetav liyadei." What can the first one sell to the second one? Only whatever tchus he can sell. What he sells, whatever tchus he himself has. So he himself, Shimon, wouldn't have had the ability to keep this field past the Yovel. Therefore, he doesn't have. Therefore, neither does Hekdesh that got it from Shimon. But therefore, it goes back to Rubin. Continues the Mishnah. Koyim val levim makdishin la'olam v'goyim la'olam. Koyim and levim are always able to be makdish a field, as we'll see in the Gemara what that means. And they're always able to be goyim the field. They don't lose the field if it's a field that they inherited. Now again, we learned in the previous Mishnah and in the Gemara on it that if a koyim himself received a field as a tzedei achuzah after Yovel, and then he was makdish it, then we don't say necessarily that it goes back to him. Then it depends on the circumstances whether he himself bought it back before Yovel or not. But in other words, in that sense, he's like the original owner. But what we mean over here is a field that the Kohen himself inherited from his own ancestors, which again, I mean, the Kohenim and Levim received land in Eretz Yisrael. They would say they didn't receive a whole portion in Eretz Yisrael like the other Shvatim, but they received the Orem Niklat, the 48 cities with land around them. So if a Kohen sells his field in one of those places, he can always be Goyle Levi, Goyle Mo'olam, Bein L'Tnei HaYovel, Bein L'Achal Yovel, whether before or after Yovel, even then he can be Goyle it. We don't say that it's lost to him and goes to the other Kohenim, because the Pasuk says, Ge'ulas Olam Tiyel Levim. The Levim can always buy back what they bought, what they gave, or what they sold. There's a context to that pasuk is talking about where he sold it to a private person, even if it was a house in a walled city, he still gets it back after a year, unlike a regular person, as we're going to learn in the last paragraph. But it also applies where it's given to Hekdesh, and then he would have lost it after Yovel if he hadn't bought it back. If he's a Kohen or a Levi, he doesn't. Okay. So the Gemara starts off. Turn it up on it. Minayim lekeach sodim aviv. How do we know the first din in our Mishnah? The first din in our Mishnah, we don't need a source for. It's obvious. If his father died and only then he was makdish it, then obviously it's considered a tzedei achuzah, even though he bought it while his father was alive. Because the fact is, once his father died, then now it definitely becomes a tzedei achuzah because he definitely inherited it as part of the estate. But the question is, on the second din in the Mishnah, where he was makdish it, then his father died. So we had Rav Meir saying it's a tzedei mishnah, and Rav Yehuda and Rav Shimon saying it's a tzedei achuzah. So now we learn this guy, so we're going to learn the sources for these two opinions. So turn it up on him. Minayin l'kayach sada me'aviv v'hichdish. How do we know a person bought a field from his father? He was makdish it. V'achatach mes aviv. Later on, his father died. Minayin sh'tei l'fon of tzedei achuzah. How do we know that it's considered to him a tzedei achuzah? Therefore, the pasuk says, "Im misdei miknasei asher lo misdei achuzasei." Meaning, as we said, meaning she'ener ro'oyel yisdei achuzah. As we said in the Mishnah, that's what Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon say. The din of sdei mikna only applies to a field that never would have been a sdei achuzah under normal circumstances. Yostazushi ro'oyel yisdei achuzah, as opposed to this one, could conceivably have been a sdei achuzah, because eventually, even if he hadn't bought it from his father, eventually he would have inherited it from his father. This exact case, he bought a field from his father, then his father died. Oh no, actually, here we're going back to the first case of the Mishnah. So Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon are saying the Pasuk is teaching us about the second case of the Mishnah, where he was makdishit, where first he was makdishit, then his father died. Rav Meir says no. Rav Meir, I mean, minayin l'kayach sodim ha'aviv. How do we know that? No, the case of the pasuk refers to the first case of the Mishnah. He bought a field from his father, umes aviv. Then his father died. Va'achasach hakdisha. Later on, after his father died, he was makdish it. Minayin sh'tei l'fanav k'sdei achuzah. How do we know that such a field is considered a sdei achuzah? Which, after all, you could have thought that maybe not, considering he did buy it from his father, so maybe it should be considered a sdei mikna. No, tamad l'ma. Ve'im sdei mikna. Fashal im sdei achuzah. Again, sodah she'ei. Rav Meir doesn't go according to what it could be or could not be. He goes according to what it actually is. So he says, the pasuk says, "Asher lo yisdei achuzasei," meaning right now it's not de'achuzasei. What it could have been, what it couldn't have been, we don't care about that. Doesn't matter. Right now, we look at, is this Be'achuzah or is it not? Well, then, Yotzuzushi Be'achuzah. This one is excluded because, after all, it is a Be'achuzah because his father died and he inherited it, and only then was he makdish it. Therefore, the Pasuk is telling us to ignore the fact that he bought it from his father and just focus on the fact that right now it's a Be'achuzah. But to tell me that, to say that if it just where it could have been a Sde'achoza, in other words, where he bought it and then where he's makdish it and then his father died, to say that that should be considered a Sde'achoza, the mayor says no, that's not what the pasuk means. Okay, so the Gemara says lema b'hakam yichudi. So should we say that the underlying machlokes between Reb Meir versus Reb Yehuda and Reb Shimon is as follows: that Reb Meir saw the kinyan peres kekinyan aguf drami. Maybe the mayor holds that even if he bought something only insofar as peres, then it's still considered like he bought the guf. Now let's consider, when this son bought the property from his father, it was only a kinyan peres, because eventually, let's say there was no hekdesh involved over here. If the son just buys it from his father, what happens comes yovel. Assuming the father is still alive, it goes back to the father. So therefore, in other words, in effect, the son only bought the field for these 20 or 30 or however many years it is, insofar as Tatus. All he's entitled to is Tatus out of it. So therefore, but if we say that's considered a kinyan aguf, so if we say that kind of thing is considered a kinyan aguf, so then we would say only, so when his father died and later on he was makdish it, then you would think, then you need the pasuk to tell us that it's considered a Sde'achoza. But if he was makdish while it was still a Sde' Mishnah, then his father died, then we would argue that no, it's not considered a Sde'achoza. So the mayor would hold that kinyan peres to kinyan aguf, that it's the fact that he bought it for peres is considered like kinyan aguf, and therefore that only if he inherited it and then his father died, only then would we say, okay, we would have thought that maybe it's considered a Sde' Mishnah, and because he already bought it and he already bought the guf. And therefore, the pasuk is stressing that no, it's still considered a Sde'achoza in that case.
How can he inherit if his father is still alive?
No. We're talking about, in other words, if his father died. Again, remember, we have two cases in the Mishnah.
Hold on.
The first case of the Mishnah, which is what Reb Meir says the pasuk is referring to, is he bought the field from his father. Then his father died, so he inherited it. Then he was makdish it. So now the mayor is saying that's the case. The prophet is telling you a chiddush that it's a Sde'achoza. Now, why is it? You would think, obviously, it's a Sde'achoza. His father died. What's there to talk about? Because you would think once he bought it, while his father was alive, at that point, it's true he only bought it as far as Paris, because if his father was still alive, come Yovel, his father would get it back. But the mayor would say him buying it as far as Paris is the equivalent of buying it as far as the Guf. Therefore, it's considered as though it really is his. Therefore, you would argue when his father dies, it's not adding anything to it. It was his before, as far as the guf before. And now when his father dies, it's also considered his as far as the guf. So nothing new has been created by his father dying. Therefore, you should say it's still considered a Sde' Mishnah. So the mayor tells us that's what the pasuk is telling us, that no, that it's not a Sde' Mishnah. At that point, it is a Sde'achoza. If we didn't have
a woman has payrus from a husband's land, she doesn't own the land.
First of all, it's usually the other way around. If the woman owns the property, she has nichsim lug, and the husband is entitled to the payrus for it.
The husband owns the land.
Usually, the way it works is, no, there's no particular thing that a woman is entitled to payrus from her husband's land. It's the other way around. If a woman brings in property into the marriage, and it's nichsim, so it can be either nichsim malug or nichsim son barzel, and if it's nichsim malug, the rule will be she keeps the actual guf of the karka. She owns the actual property itself, but the husband, as long as they're married, is entitled to pay this from it.
Exactly. So why should it be different in the case of Sde'achoza?
Okay,
where you give the payrus and you acquire the guf, it doesn't stick together.
No. So one second. We're saying that the mayor, first of all, we're talking according to the mayor over here.
Yeah,
we're talking according to the mayor. he would say, at least in this particular instance, you actually have, Tosfos briefly refers over here to some other places, including in Gittin, where they talk about it at greater length, where they talk about this business, about do we say Kinyan Peiros is Kinyan Aguf or not. But the bottom line is, Reb Meir would say over here that at least for this purpose, usually we might say, you know, we sometimes for certain Tosfos discusses over there that maybe there are certain cases where we would say Kinyan Peiros lav Kinyan Aguf, where it's a matter of father being meichel to his son or whatever, but in other cases, Tosfos discusses in Gittin and in Bava Basra that there might be distinctions. Some cases we might hold Kinyan Peiros to Kinyan Aguf, other places we might hold Kinyan Peiros lav to Kinyan Aguf. The bottom line is, over here, we can say that over here, apparently, a mayor holds Kinyan Peiros to Kinyan Aguf. Therefore, once the son has bought the property from his father, in such a way that he's entitled to Peiros from it only, because ultimately, if his father's still alive at Yovel, it goes back to his father, the mayor will consider that it tantamount to a Kinyan Aguf. Not obviously that he would keep it come Yovel. The fact is, the Torah tells us he won't. But in other words, insofar as that if his father dies, that no new status has been created on this field. We don't say that now it changes. Well, we would think, rather, that no new status is created in it. That it should still be considered a Shdei Mikna. Therefore, it would have the rules of Shdei Mikna as far as if he's not the shit. Comes Reb Meir and tells us, no, the Pasuk is telling us by saying, Asher Lo Misdei Achuzaso, that no, the rules of Shdei Mikna don't apply to this because right now it is Shdei Achuzaso. The fact of the matter is, he did inherit it, and therefore, in other words, a change was made in its status. Before it was a Shdei Mikna, now it's a Shdei Achuzah. That's Reb Meir. Whereas Reb Yehuda and Reb Shimon Savri Kinyan Peiros lav Kinyan Aguf Gomi. We could say that Reb Yehuda and Reb Shimon hold that Kinyan Peiros is not Kinyan Aguf. So therefore, if the father had died before he was Makdashit, then he is Yashining the Guf. Then it becomes a Shdei Achuzah. So there's no Chiddush. The Pasuk doesn't need to tell us anything about that. Obviously, it's a Shdei Achuzah. The Chiddush would be, the Pasuk is telling us, even if right now it's not a Shdei Achuzah, when he was Makdashit, that is, but it's something that in the future could be a Shdei Achuzah, namely the second case of the Mishnah, where he bought it, then was Makdashit, then his father died. That's what Rabbi Hordeh and Rabbi Shimon would be saying. That's the Chiddush of the Pasuk.
And here he bought it in Peiros.
He bought it in Peiros. There's no question that the son bought it only as far as Peiros, because there's no question if the father was alive at Yovel, that assuming the son wasn't Makdashit, never mind Hektish or anything, if the son just buys it from his father and his father's still alive, come Yovel, there's no question the father gets it back. So there's no question the son has done a Kinyan Peiros over here. The question is, do we consider that Kinyan Peiros to be to a certain extent like Kinyan Aguf? We could say, Reb Meir says yes. Therefore, we would think there's no change in status in it when his father dies, and therefore the Pasuk tells us that there is. It goes from being a Shdei Mikna to a Shdei Achuzah, but only if he's actually inheriting it from his father when his father dies, not the case where he was Makdashit and later on his father dies, where it's not actually in his possession when it comes time for him to yashin it. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon would say that no, the Kinyan Peiros is not Kinyan Aguf. Therefore, if you didn't have the Pasuk, you would think in all cases it's a Shdei Mikna. And therefore, no, the Pasuk is telling you that in this case, even in this case, where it's potentially his Achuzah, then it's still considered a Shdei Achuzah. Okay. So should we say that? Amar of Nachmi. So Rav Nachmi says no. But Alma Rav Shimon and Rav Yehuda Kinyan Peiros to Kinyan Aguf Gomi. No, generally speaking, Rav Shimon and Rav Yehuda do hold that Kinyan Peiros is to Kinyan Aguf. So you would ask, what do you need the pasuk over here? The hacha kro ashkuach v'darshi. What it is over here, it's true we have the pasuk asher lo misdei achuzaso, which we could have understood like the mayor, that it's not talking about the potential future status of the field, but rather it's talking about the actual current status of the field. Is it misdei achuzaso or not? But the reason why Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon hold differently is because they found a different pasuk and darshin it. So they said like this. Sure, but if that's all the Pasuk meant, that the Pasuk wants to tell us that there's a case where there's a field that because it's potentially, that because right now it's Shdei Achuzaso, therefore we consider it that, we say it's changed from being Shdei Mikhnoso, then the Pasuk said, if from Shdei Mikhnoso, Asher Lois Shdei Achuzaso, which is not a field of his inheritance, without the mem of Misdei, or it didn't even have to have the possessive either. It could have just said that it's not a Shdei Achuzah. My Misdei Achuzasoi. Why does it have the mem of Misdei and the possessive of Achuzasoi? That means, they say, that it means not just whether right now it's achuzasai, but therefore they say that is the pasuk stressing for us, therefore, that it's not just a matter of it being pretend, that of being right now a steachuzah, but we exclude a case where the field is potentially a steachuzah, even though right now it's not, but because potentially it could be a steachuzah, and we know that not just because the pasuk says steachuzasai, but because it says misdeachuzasai, so it has that extra mem and that extra possessive, that all taken altogether tells us that it's not just a matter of whether it's actually right now, as your mayor says, it's whether it's potentially a steachuzah or not. So the halacha is like Rabbi Hoda and Rabbi Shimon. So even if it was roi lius deachuzah, then it goes to the kohenim. So in other words, in the second case of our Mishnah, where he bought it from his father, he was makdish it. Then his father died. Then we're saying that it's considered a deachuzah, and therefore, if he doesn't buy it back, but therefore the rule of Sela and Punyan per year applies, and therefore the rule of if he doesn't buy it back by Yovel, then it goes to the Kohenim also applies.
So that's in the case that he bought the payos or the field?
The very fact that he bought it, this man shall Yovel Noyeg, means that he bought it only for payos. By definition, he bought it only for payos. What we're saying is, in other words, it's not a machlokes of whether Kinyan payos or Kinyan aguf. Reb Meir would hold Kinyan payos or Kinyan aguf. Reb Yehuda and Reb Shimon also would hold Kinyan payos or Kinyan aguf. The reason why they say over here, we say differently, is because the pasuk has that extra mem, misdei, achuzasai, and the extra possessive, achuzasai, and that tells us we're not just talking about whether right now, in actuality, it says achuzah, which would be Reb Meir's case, even if it's potentially his achuzah, which is their case. So therefore, it doesn't matter. If he bought the field from his father, then it doesn't matter what the order of things is. Whether he was makdish it and then his father died, which is Rabbi Hoda and Rabbi Shimon's case, or whether his father died and then he was makdish it, which is Reb Meir's case, either way, Rabbi Hoda and Rabbi Shimon are saying it's considered a steachuzah, and it has all the rules of a steachuzah. And that is how the Rambam passes the halacha.
But if his father passes before he magdishes the field, then obviously it's going to be his by.
Okay, again, according to the mayor, the reason why we needed a pasuk to tell us that is because we would have thought that the son already bought Kinyan Aguf from it. And therefore, the pasuk is telling us that nevertheless you ignore that and you still say now it became a steachuzah. According to him, that's what the pasuk is needed for, but you don't have a pasuk, therefore, to tell us about the other case where he hadn't inherited when his father died because he'd already been makdish. According to the Yehuda and the Shimon, again, we said, Maskana, because it says, misdei achuzasai, therefore it means that both cases are included. Not only when he was makdish after he inherited it, having previously bought it from his father, but also when he was makdish before he inherited it, So he bought it, was makdish, then his father died, also it's considered steachuzah.
Why from the meat can derive both cases? What's the reason?
What do you mean? I don't understand the question. There's two different cases. That's what they're saying. Mis steachuzah. I mean, as long as there was any way of it being a steachuzah, whether it's right now a steachuzah or whether potentially it's a steachuzah, either way, the same rules apply. Then we said in the Mishnah, Koreinim and Leviim makdishin la'olam kula. We said Koreinim and Leviim can always be makdish and they can always be goyel. So the Gemara says, Bishlema goyel in Istrich. I can understand why the Mishnah needs to mention that they can always be goyel. La'apukim idi Yisrael, d'lai parki elad yoyel. Because, in other words, the Mishnah is telling us that Koreinim and Leviim are not like Yisraelim, who are only able to redeem their Sdei Achuzah until yoyel. And if not, then they lose it and it goes to the Koreinim. Okay, so very simple. Then the Mishnah wants to tell us Koyanim and Levim are not subject to that rule. They always are Goyim. El Makdishin, but you have to ask, why does the Mishnah have to mention that they're able to be Makdish all the time? My Iriya Koyanim and Levim, why do I have to mention that Koyanim and Levim can be Makdish anytime? Afilu Yisrael Nami, isn't the same true of Yisraelim as well, that they can be Makdish anytime? V'chi tema b'shnasa yovel atma. So you're going to answer, okay, maybe the Mishnah is talking about that. We mean whether you can be makdish during yovel itself. Maybe the Mishnah means that. Maybe the Mishnah means that Yisraelim can't be makdish during yovel, but Kohenim and Levim can. Well, hanichal l'shmuel. Okay, well that works out according to Shmuel at the beginning of our perek. D'ama b'shnasa yovel atma lekidsha. He said that if Yisrael is makdish a field during yovel year, the kedusha doesn't take effect. So fine, you would say, you would say, therefore, the Chiddush is of our Mishnah, Kohenim and Levim are not like that. They're able to be Makdish even during Yovel, and the Kedusha will be Chal. That's according to Shmuel. Ela l'Rav, but according to Rav, who said that you could be Makdish during Yovel, and just if you're Makdish during Yovel, then there's no Giroin, you're paying the full 50 Sloim if you want to buy it back. Nay, Iliya Kohenim and Levim. So why does the Mishnah have to specify Kohenim and Levim? Afili Yisrael Nami. Wouldn't the same rule apply to a Yisrael as well? So Gemara says, okay, true, but believe Taimech. Okay, so new according to your own Svara that you think that this is a that you're asking, you the Makshin were asking the question, you could ask Bainless now Yovel, Bain Lachar Yovel Lamali. Then after all, you could say, okay, even according to Shmuel, why does it have to say that they're able to be Makdish before or after Yovel? There's certainly no Chiddush in that a Kohen can be Makdish or a Levi can be Makdish after Yovel because everybody agrees you can. So even according to Shmuel, there's something extra in the Mishnah. Yeah. Hello, no, the answer would be, I did ton of racial lichnei ayovel or achar ayovel, since the racial, since earlier in the peret, by Yitzu'elim, it mentioned the case of them being makdish before and after Yovel. It said you're not supposed to be makdish within 2 years before Yovel because then you won't have Giro and you're going to have to pay the 450. And you can't be poda within 1 year after, within 1 year after Yovel, which those rules apply to Yisraelim. Tana Seifa Nami, Bein La'achar Yovel, Bein Lifnei Yovel. So in the Seifa, in our Mishnah also, it mentions La'achar Yovel and Lifnei Yovel, even though it's not strictly necessary for our Mishnah. But Ivy, the Tonadesha, and Makdish and Main Boylin, and since the beginning of the Perek, mentioned rules about when a Yisrael is able to be Makdish, that if he's Makdish within 2 years before Yovel, he's paying a penalty for it, and he can't be Goyal within 1 year after Yovel, Tonanami Sefer, Makdish and Goyalin, so therefore the Sefer, our Mishnah, also mentions about Makdish and Goyalin, even though according to Rav, none of that would really be necessary. It's just once we mention it that way, we mention Makdishin and Goyalin, we mention the verb Makdishin and Goyalin, and we mention the times, listening Ayovel and Ma'acha Ayovel, but at the beginning of the parak, so therefore our parak finishes off with the same kind of thing. It mentions Makdishin, Megolim, Ma'olam, Bein listening Ayovel, Bein Ma'acha Ayovel, but you're right, according to Rav, there's no particular Chiddush in that they can be Makdish anytime. The Chiddush is that they can be Goyal anytime, which that you need to know, which you wouldn't otherwise realize that. That the field isn't lost. Come Yovel, if a Kohen or a Levi was makdish it, so that Mishnah needs to tell us. And once it mentions that, then it mentions all the other details as well to be parallel to the beginning of the parak. Hadron Aloch in Makdishim. But now we're going to talk about this parak is going. We're going to continue on the topic of being makdish field. But here now we're going to start talking. We're going to start our Mishnah is going to start talking about a different scenario. Till now we've been talking about being makdish a field when Yovel is in effect. Now we're going to talk about the dinim that apply if you're makdish a field when Yovel is not in effect. Now, as we've talked about before, you had a period, the last 100 or so years of the first Beit HaMikdash, Yovel was not in effect, with the exception of that last Yovel in Yoshiyahu's time. During the whole second Beit HaMikdash, also Yovel wasn't in effect, because it wasn't Kol Yoshvei Olah. Most of the Jewish people are not living in Eretz Yisrael. And of course nowadays, Yovel is not Noyeg until Mashiach comes. So our Mishnah and the Gemara on it is going to deal with what happens if you makdish a field when Yovel is not in effect. So we know like this. You don't have the rule of Zerach Chomet Sa'orah B'chamishim Shekel Kos. If you don't have the rule of one Selah and one Punyan per year, instead you go based on the actual market value of the field, whatever people are willing to pay for it. You also don't have the din that the Kohenim are going to get it come Yovel, because there is no Yovel. Okay, so our Mishnah is going to deal with those dinim. So the Mishnah says, "Hamakdish es sadeo b'shasha ein ha-yovel." Person is makdish his field when yovel is not in effect. So what happens now? He's been makdish it. Hekdish needs to do something with that field. They need to, and generally speaking, they're not going to keep the field themselves. They're going to sell it. Omer Loi, so the Gizbar tells the owner, Sach Atharishan, you have to open the bid. You have to open the bidding. You have to tell us how much you're willing to be paid there for. Now, why is that? Why is the owner told to be paid there for? It's Shabbailim, no sin chomish, because Hekdesh stands to gain if the owner is being paid there because he's going to have to pay a chomish. So the reason, now, it's true he would be paying a chomish in the times when Yovel is noig also, but the difference is then you don't have to ask him how much would you be willing to pay, because we know how much he pays. He pays one seller and one punyan per year left to Yovel. So, as we said before, if there's 8 years left to Yovel, for example, then the Bailam are going to be paying 10 seller and 10 punyan, because 8 and 8 plus a chomish. But when we're talking with Man She'ena, Yovel Noyeg, so you don't have that rule of seller and punyan per year, so therefore they have to do two, so therefore he's still going to be paying a chomish, but we have to first ask him, how much are you willing to open the bidding for? So, the Mishnah says, Maisa ba'echad sheikhs shedeh v'pnei rasoi. Happened once, a person had a very bad quality field, so he was makdish it because of that. It's poor quality, he's not getting out of it as much as he's putting into it, there's high taxes on it, whatever the exact reason is, he didn't want the field, he was makdish it. Omruloit sachat derishin. So the Gizbarim told him, as we said in the Mishnah, you have to open the bidding before anybody else can buy it. You have to open the bidding how much you're willing to pay for it. Omar, so he says, how do you actually be Easter? Okay, I'm willing to buy it for an Easter, which is a small coin. Omar Rabbi Yossi interjects and says, Loi Omar Zeki Easter, Elika Besa. Actually, the person did not even say that I'm willing to pay an Easter for it. He said, I'm willing to pay for it with an egg. Now, how can you use an egg? Shehekdish nifta b'kesef or b'shava kesef. Because you're able to be paid a hekdish, not just with actual money, you can also use shava kesef. You can use anything that has a monetary value. So an egg has a monetary value. Okay, you can't be paid maybe with avodim and shtaris and whatever, fine. But any metalin that have an intrinsic monetary value, Rabbi Yossi says you can be paid with. So you could be paid with an egg if you want. Tosfos points out over here that Rabbi Yossi lived after the Churban. So if Rabbi Yossi is reporting something that he actually saw happen, then how do we have any way that we're telling him to be paid for a minimum amount? So Tosfos says either one possibility is Rabbi Yossi is reporting something that happened before his times when the Beth Mikdash was still standing, or Tosfos says actually maybe even when the Beth Mikdash is not standing anymore, maybe even so, it's true that technically you're able to be paid a kodshim for far less than their value when there's no Beth Mikdash. You're able to be mechalal it on a shavah prufta because anyway there's no hektish to gain from it. But nevertheless, the Tosfos says maybe even shaloi bizman abayis, the owner still has to have first crack at being goyal it, and only if he's not, only then would you go and find other people to be poydeh. Anyway, so Rabbi Yossi is saying that he wasn't poydeh with an Easter, but rather with an egg, and nobody else bid up above that, because after all, it was a bad field, and it was a white elephant, nobody was interested in it. Omalai, he got ticha. So the Gizbar says to the guy, okay, it's yours. Nimsa matched an Easter, so the bottom line is, what ended up happening is the guy lost an Easter, he had to pay for Hekdesh, with Sadeo, the fun of it, he ended up having the same bad field after all. So you can't get rid of a bad field by giving it away to Hekdesh. You want to get rid of a bad field, find some other yokel who will be willing to take it off your hands and pay the property taxes on it or whatever, but you can't get away by giving it to Hekdesh, because Hekdesh is going to make you buy it right back. So the Gemara says, "Hamatish Sadeo b'Shachol Oimrin." So we said the Mishnah starts out that we say Oimer or Oimrin, that the Gizbarim tell the original owner, "You make the first bid." So what do you mean? We tell him implies that we tell him, but if he doesn't want to, we say, "Okay, fine, then you don't have to." V'Hatanya Kofin, but we learn in a Braisa that we force him to. So what is that? So what does the Mishnah mean? Oimrin. The answer is you're right. My Oimrin, Nami Kofin. You're right. The Mishnah, when it says Oimrin, means not just saying to him, would you like to, but it means telling him, you have to do this. And if you don't do this, then Beis Din is going to force you to do it. The Boisema, Me'ikra Oimrin, or another possibility, what the Mishnah means is it's two stages. First, you tell him gently, you're supposed to be Psach Atharishon. If he refuses to, if he listens, then good, he listens. The Eloi Kofin, and if not, then we're going to force him to make the first bid, because if he ends up winning the bid, then he's going to pay the extra chomesh, and therefore Hekdesh stands to benefit from it. Now, Tosfos points out, usually with most mitzvahs, usually with most mitzvahs that involve pedia, we don't force the person to do it. What we should say is, in other words, what's the situation over here? It's not like the owner is the only one who's able to buy from Hekdesh. Other people are able to buy it. We're just saying, l'chatchila, the owner is better off doing it because then he'll pay a chomish. But so what? We have many other cases where you have a certain mitzvah to be done, and if that one's not done, then instead you're going to do a different one. For example, Tosfos brings, we learned in Bechoros, for example, that you're supposed to redeem your pigeon, your petra chamor. If you didn't, the inloy sifte v'aragdoi. But we don't say that we force the owner to do the pedia. He doesn't want to do the pedia. Fine, he'll have to do the arifa. So why over here? And the same thing with a few other cases. So why over here is it different? The reason is Tosfos says because the fact of the matter is we're talking about Hekdesh over here. There's likely to be a problem of meila if people end up using this field. So like this, we want it to be gotten out of Hekdesh's possession as soon as possible. Again, I suppose, if it's a field that Hekdesh themselves can actually use on an ongoing basis, for example, to grow wheat for korbanos or whatever, then fine, I guess, then they'd want to keep it. But if we're talking about ordinarily a person has Makdesh a field, it might be anywhere in Eretz Yisrael. It might be 3 days distance from Yerushalayim. Hekdesh can't use such a field. They're not going to go schlep all the way back and forth to plant wheat over there. So then they just want to get rid of it as fast as possible for the highest bidder and have the money, you go to Hekdesh. So then the point is, the longer it stays in Hekdesh's possession, the longer, the larger the chance that there's going to be takola, that somebody is going to use it and end up being over on Me'ila. Therefore, over here, we want to force the owner to make the first bid so that we can get things over with as fast as possible. Then we said in the Mishnah, Shabbailim Noisin Chomish, we said the reason why the owner has to make the first bid is because he pays a Chomish. So the question is, my Irya Shabbailim Noisin Chomish, why does the Mishnah have to mention this fact that he pays a Chomish? What was that, Aaron? Google explanation? Okay. I'm not quite clear what you just texted me, Alan.
Oh, sorry. I had mute on. Oh. I said, good explanation. It texted it wrong.
Okay.
Very practical.
Thank you. Okay. So the Mishnah continued. We said the owner pays a chomish. That's why we make him make the first bid. So the question is, my area, Shabbailim Noisin Chomish, why do you have to mention that the owner pays the Chomish? Typically, the idea of Chavivale Tofi or Partikla. I have a better reason. Usually, a field that a person himself originally owned, here we're not necessarily talking to Sdeachoda necessarily, it could be even Sde Mikna, because again, we're talking Bizman Sheena Yevel Noig, so there's not a great deal of difference, but nevertheless, a field that a person used to own very often is something precious to him, the Aydi de Chaviva Ale, because it's precious to him, Tofi or Parisha, he's more likely to increase he's more likely to bid higher in order to be Parisha. Okay, so you have the case in the Mishnah where he was maxed the field because it's bad, and then he was willing to only pay an ish for it, but normally it's not like that. Normally a person has maxed his field when he'd be willing to bid up the price a bit in order to be able to get it back. So that would be a better reason why we should make the owner make the first bid. And besides that, you have another reason why the owner should be told to do it first. Mitzvah ge'ula ba'adin, because the ideal mitzvah is that the owner is goyal it. As the pasuk says, the im lo yigoyal, if you didn't redeem it, the nimkar be'erkecha, then it gets sold for its erech. So in other words, the ideal thing is that the owner pays first. So you have two good reasons already. Why mention the fact that the owner pays a chaymesh? The answer is, you're right, the Gemara says, chod a chod a. You're right, the Mishnah is mentioning one reason, and then there are other reasons. Number one, because it's precious sand, he's likely to bid up it up higher. Number two, because mitzvah ge'ula ba'adin. And then there's a third reason, which is a reason that the Mishnah picks to give, because the owner pays a chomish. So you're right, it's one reason, but there are two other equally good reasons that the Mishnah could have mentioned. Okay. Then the Mishnah had said, it happened the person was Makdish his field because it was bad quality, and the Gizbarim made him buy it back for an Ether. And so the Tanakama had said he had to pay an Ether, and Rabbi Yossi had said it wasn't an Ether, it was an egg. So Lema Bahakam Mitzvah, so should we say that that's the actual Machlokes? The Rabbi Yossi saw the Shava Kesef to Kesef. Rabbi Yossi would hold that Shava Kesef is like Kesef, so therefore when the Pasuk says that you pay Kesef for it, V'nosin hakesef for kamloi is the usual way that the Gemara often quotes the pasuk, although that's actually a bit of a misquotation of the pasuk. The Gemara is actually kind of taking and combining together parts of a few pesukim. But the point is, it does mention paying kesef. So Rabbi Yossi would hold, that's fine, shavah kesef is the equivalent of kesef, but Rabbanan Savri shavah kesef ain't a kesef, the Chum would hold that not. But is that the machloikas? Can't be, but Hakaim on the shavah kesef a kesef. We know as a fact, the Gemara mentioned in Baba Kama, that everybody agrees that shavah kesef is kesef. For example, when it comes to nizikin, you can pay for nizikin in money, kesef yishalom levolam, as the pasuk says over there, but you can equally well pay with other things that are not kesef. The shavah kesef, after the subin, you could even pay with bran, the Gemara says over there. And everybody agrees to that. So how can Rabbi Yossi over here be disagreeing? So the answer is, you're right. The kula alma shavah kesef kesef. You're right. Everybody agrees shavah kesef is kesef. V'hocha v'poidin v'gavah she'en v'chumshay shavah sota kamifli. Here the machloikas is, can you be poided with something where the chumash of it is not even worth a prota? In other words, like this, when he paid an iser, according to the Tanakhama, he's not actually paying only an iser, he's paying an iser plus an extra chumash. On the other hand, an egg is not worth enough. If you were to pay an extra 25% of the value of an egg, that extra 25% wouldn't add up to a prota. So Tanakhama saw the iser. The Tanakhama says you just have to use an iser. The ikka b'chumshay shavah prota, where the chumash of it will equal at least a shavah prota, for good, then parkinan, then you're able to be poided with it. The first mission of Kedushin tells us that a prota is 1/8 of an iser heitalki. I don't know whether the iser we're talking about over here is a regular iser or an iser heitalki, but whatever it is, as long as it contains at least 4 protas, then you're good, because the chumash of it will equal 1 prota. So the Tanakhama says that's the minimum amount that you can be poided with. And Rabbi Yossi says, I don't care whether the chumash of it is worth a prota or not. An egg is perfectly fine for doing pidyon with also. The chumash of it is going to be worth less than a prota. Doesn't matter, says Rabbi Yossi. Okay. Then the Mishnah finishes off the story. So the gizbo says to the guy, you win back your property. Nimsa maskin iser. So it comes out he lost an iser, but today or the front of, and he still has the field in his possession. So we mentioned that he lost an iser. That means stomach the Rabbanon. We have a Sam Mishnah over here that it went like the Rabbanon said that he had to pay an iser, not like Rabbi Yossi that he had to pay, that he was able to pay an egg. The halacha is like the Chachamim that you need to have. The halacha is in fact like the Chachamim that you need to be poida with something where you're going to have at least where the chumash of it is going to be worth at least a prota. So therefore, yeah, the minimum you can be poida with is an iser, or maybe slightly less than an iser. If we're talking an iser haitalki, which is worth 8 protas, then fine, you can be poida with a half an iser. But that would be the minimum. Okay. Mishnah says, Omer Echad. So now let's say, so okay, we're starting the bidding on this property. So we're starting the bidding on this property that belongs to Hesish. Omer Echad Hareishali the Esher Sloim. So suppose one person says, I'm willing to buy it for 10 Sloim. The Echad Omer the Esrim. Another one says 20. The Echad Omer the Shloishim. The Echad Omer the Aboim. The Echad Omer the Chamishim. We're going way, way up over here. The Gizbar is very excited. Hektish is, the money is coming in nicely to Hektish. You can imagine, like, you know, the Gabbai and Shul over there. Imagine, like, you're doing this with an Aliyah or something. You know, he starts off the bidding at 10, and then they bid it up 5 times as much. Your average Gabbai would be very happy. Well, what happened is, over here, Chazer Bo Shal Chamishim. Now what happens, though, is the guy who bid 50 changes his mind. He says, never mind, I'm not willing to buy it for 50 anymore. Well, the problem is, you have a concept, which we have all over in Shas, called Amirose L'Gaboya Kim Sirose L'Hedrit. This that he said, that he's going to give something to Hektish, is once he said it, that's the equivalent of giving it to a regular person. So the same way as if he had given this amount of money to a regular person for a business deal, he wouldn't be able to be chozer in it. So the same thing, he said that he's going to give it to Hektish, therefore, we hold him responsible for that. So therefore, we're mashkin him in a chosav ad ester. So therefore, we take away 10... We take away 10 sela of his property, and that way, so now the gizbar is going to get 40 from the next highest bidder, and then he's going to get 10 from this one. So that way, Hektish ends up getting the full 50 that was bid. chozer by shalav boim, what happens now if the one who said 40 also changes his mind and doesn't want to buy it for 40 anymore? Same thing, the mashkinim and the chozer about Esther, the gizbar is entitled to take away 10 sloyim from his property, so now he'll have 10 sloyim from the fifth guy, 10 sloyim from the fourth guy, and 30 from the third guy, and there we have the 50. If the one who said 30 also changes his mind, same thing, we take away 10 from his property. If the one who said 20 also changes his mind, we also take away 10 from his property. If the one who said 10 also changes his mind, then what we do is at that point, now we can't just say we're going to take away 10 from the last one, because after all, the property is worth something. We're going to end up selling it for something. So we can't hold him responsible for the full 10. So at that point, what we do is we sell the property for its actual market value. And then we make the one who bid 10, we make him pay the rest. So let's say we end up selling it for 6, so we make him pay 4. So that way, Hector still comes out with the 50 that they thought they were going to get in the first place, but each person is paying a certain amount towards that. Okay. Another case, habaylim onim be'esrim. Suppose the owner says, I'm willing to pay 20 for this field. V'chol adam onim be'esrim. Somebody else also says, I'm also willing to pay 20. Well, then the din is habaylim kodim. So the owner is the one who's kodim. He's the one who pays and gets the field. Because as we said before, he's going to have to pay a chomish. So he's not actually paying only 20. He ends up paying hektish 25. And therefore, Hector stands to gain by the Bailam paying the 25 and getting it, rather than this other person paying only 20. What about Omer Echad Harei Shali Be'esrim Ba'achas? What if another person says, I'm willing to pay 21 for it? So the owner said 20. Somebody else comes and bids it up and says 21. But now the din is, HaBailam Noisnin Esrim Ba'shesh. We make the owner pay 26. How do we get 26? So like this, we say as follows. We don't want Hektish to get less than what they would have gotten if you, the owner, had been poyed. And you, the owner, began bidding 20, and therefore we said you would have had to pay 25. Now what happened, though, is like this. This other person said that actually I consider it to be worth 21. So we don't add an extra to the chomesh of that 21. We don't say that now the chomesh is going to go, instead of being 5, is going to be 5 1/4. We don't do that. We do still keep the chomesh pegged to the original amount that the owner said, which is 20. But we do make him pay the extra 1 that this other guy said. So therefore, the result is he's paying 26. He's paying the 20 that he himself bid, the 1 seller that the other person overbid him, and the 5 sloyim that he himself would have had to pay as chomesh. So therefore, he ends up paying 26 rather. Now, most of the Rishonim understand it that way, that it means regardless, we're going to make the owner pay 26 no matter what. The Rambam's shitta is that we only do that if the owner then overbid this guy by even a pruta. So if this guy, so if the owner had said 20, and then this other guy says 21, and the owner says 21 on a pruta, then the Rambam says that's when we'll have the din of on Mishnah that we make the original owner pay 26 plus a pruta. But if he hadn't overbid, if he had just said, fine, you said 21, gesunte heit, then I'm bowing out of the bidding, then the Rambam says we would just sell it to the other guy at 21 and that's that. And the Raiva disagrees with the Rambam because he says that's not what the Mishnah doesn't mention anything about the owner overbidding over the other guy. Anyway, the Esrim Ashtayim, same thing. If somebody else bids 22, same idea. I'm buying them notes from Esrim Vasheva. The owner has to pay 27. Same idea. We make him pay the extra 2 that this guy bid it up. The Esrim Vasholish, I'm buying them notes from Esrim Vashmoina. If the other guy bid 23, then we make the owner pay 28. The Esrim Vaaba, I'm buying them notes from Esrim Vatesha. If the other guy bid 24, we make the owner pay 29. The Esrim Vachomash, I'm buying them notes from Shloshim. And if he bid 25, we make the owner pay 30. Now, you have to ask, why would we make the owner pay 30? At this point, the other guy bid 25. The owner himself would have paid 20 plus a chaymish, which also equals 25. There's no gain to Hektish in the other cases, we can understand. Because if, let's say, for example, the other guy was willing to buy it for 24, and he was going to pay only 24 because he's not paying a chaimish, then Hektish stands to lose a selah, so therefore we're going to make the owner pay in order to make sure that Hektish doesn't lose. But the Gemara is going to ask the question. The Gemara is going to ask the question: Why over here if the other guy is willing to pay 25, that means he's exactly equaling what the original owner was going to pay. So why are we making the original owner pay anything? We'll see about that in the Gemara. Okay. The rule is she'ein mosifin chaimish al iluya shalzeh. The rule in all of the above is that we're not increasing the chaimish based on the other guy's evaluation. We still keep the chaimish pegged to the owner's original evaluation. His original bid was 20, therefore we peg the chaimish to that, and therefore the chaimish remains at 5 regardless, even though other people are saying 21 or 22 or 23 or 24 or whatever. What about Omar Echad Harishali Be'esrim Rashesh? Suppose now somebody comes and bids 26. So then it depends. Im Rosu Abaylam Lutzen Shloshim Be'echad Be'dinner. Now if the owner wants to pay 31 and a dinner, now at this point we don't force the owner. Because at this point, Hektish has already gotten everything that they would have gotten, the Keren plus the Chemesh plus even a little bit extra. So now if the owner wants to give 31 and a dinner, a dinner, remember, is one quarter of a seller. So now we're going to end up seeing in the Gemara why in this case the owner's bid would have to include the extra dinner. We said before that we're not increasing the chaimish. The chaimish still stays at 5. So why is it now if the other guy bids 26? Why isn't it enough if the owner says 31? Why would it have to be 31 and a quarter? That we'll see in the Gemara. So if they do that, Habaylam Koydman, then the owner is the winner, and they're the one who gets the field. The Imlav, and if not, Oymaloyhi Gaticha, then the Gizbar says to the guy who did 26, you got it. Okay. So Gemara Storso. Omer of Chisda. Let's talk about the first case of the Mishnah. Again, we said we had 5 people bidding. One bid 10, then 20, then 30, then 40, then 50. Then we said the one that bid 50 changed his mind. We said we take away 10 sloim from him, and then if the one who said 40 changes his mind, we take away 10 from him, etc., etc. Omer of Chista, loy shanu, this that we said in the Mishnah, that we take 10 away from the guy who bid 50, that would apply only Elisha ben Aboyim Oymed ben Kaimai. That would only apply if the one who says 40 is, if the one who said 40 is still sticking to his guns. He's still willing to buy it for 40 at that time. Later on, maybe as the Mishnah says, later on maybe he changes his mind. But if when the one who says 50, the one who said 50, if when he says, forget it, I changed my mind, I don't want to pay 50. If the one who's saying 40 at that point is still willing to pay 40, then that would be the din of the Mishnah. Aval, but, says Rav Chisda, ein ben mem oimshim kreim, right? But if the one who bids 40 is also not willing to stick to it, so the 50 and the 40 change their mind, then the shalshin b'nehem, then we split the difference between them. Now, what do you mean we split the difference? Rashi learns that what it means is like this: you make the one who bids 50 has to pay 15, the one who bids 40 has to pay 5, because the idea is, Rashi explains, When the last one said 50, the one who said 40 has nothing to do with that. When he said 40, his maximum bid was 40. So he, as far as he's concerned, a bid of 50 is out of the picture for him. So the one who bid 50 is responsible for that whole 10. Then, as far as the remaining 10, the fact that the 50 and the 40 both changed their mind, that 10 is on both of them together, because both of them were involved in bidding it for it in effect, because the first guy said 40, and then when the second guy said 50, that he was building on the fact that the previous guy had said 40. So therefore, the difference between 30 and 40, you hold them both equally responsible for. Therefore, each of them is paying 5. The difference between 40 and 50, you're only making the guy with the 50 responsible for, because he's the only one who bid it up that high. Therefore, he winds up paying 15, and the guy of 40 pays 5. Yeah.
The Rambam has a different explanation of it. The Rambam understands that, we'll see, actually, let's continue the Gemara, and then we'll figure out how the Rambam understands the scenario. Okay, so the Gemara says, now, let's look at the Mishnah and see if that fits with what Rav Chisda is saying. We said, Chozaber Shalaborim, we said, if the one who said 40 changes his mind, Mamashkin in Adeh, so we said we take 10 Sloim away from him. So the question is, why should we take 10 away from him? Amai. Why? Why shouldn't we say that the one who bids 50 has to join in with him? According to Rav Chisda, we just said that. We said that the one who bids 50 is also on the hook for half of what the 40 had said, meaning five, meaning half of the additional amount that the 40 guy had said, meaning five. Okay, the Gemara answer is Deleka ben Chamishim. You're talking about, the Mishnah is talking about a case there was no one ever bid 50. In other words, we were thinking, the Mishnah is talking about, to begin with, there were five bidders. We thought the Mishnah is talking about there were five bidders. One said 10, one said 20, et cetera, all the way up to 50. And then we're saying, then the Mishnah started talking about that each of the bidders started changing his mind. First, the 50 said, no, never mind. Then the 40 said, no, never mind, et cetera, et cetera. But now, according to Rav Chisda, he would say that's not what the Mishnah is talking about. The Mishnah is talking about five separate cases. One is where there were five bidders, and in each case, the high bidder changed his mind only. So in the case where there were five bidders, the fifth bidder changed his mind. In the case where there were four bidders, the fourth bidder changed his mind, et cetera, et cetera. The Mishnah is not talking about a case where there's two, the Mishnah is not talking about a case where there's two bidders that change their mind. Same thing, the Gemara continues, Chozobe ben Esther and Mashkin and Chosoban Esther, I skipped the line, Chozobe ben Shloshim and Mashkin and Chosoban Esther, we said if the one who said 30 changes his mind, you take 10 away from him. Amai, why should that be? Velitin de ben Aboim Bade, according to Rav Chisda's logic, the one who bid 40 should be giving together with him. And again, the answer is the Lekha ben Aboim, we're not talking about the 40 changes his mind, and then the 30 changes his mind. We're talking about it was only bid as high as 30, and then the 30 changes his mind. Same thing. Chozer ben Esther and Mashkin ben Chozer ben Esther. If the one who said 20 changes his mind, we take away 10 from him. Amai looked into ben Shloshim Baadei. Again, why shouldn't we say the 30 pays together with him? And again, the answer is the lack of ben Shloshim. Same thing. The case is, that case of the Mishnah is there were only two bidders. One said 10, one said 20, and then the 20 changed his mind. So Gemara says, Ehochi, if you're going to understand the Mishnah that way, that we're talking about five separate cases, aim a safer, then you have to look at the end of the Mishnah. We said, Chozer bo shel Esther, if the one who bid 10 changes his mind, Moichrin oisa b'shavya, we said we sell the property for its fair market value, v'nifroi m'shel Esther at a moicher, and then we make the one who bid 10, we make him pay the difference. So in the scenario that I mentioned before, let's say we ended up selling it for 6, so we make him pay 4. But why should that be? According to Rav Chisda's logic, Leisiv de ben Esther mahade, the one who bid 20 should have to join together with him. So you're going to say, okay, maybe the case of the Mishnah is also there was no 20 bidder. There was only someone who bid 10. So 110, in that case, then what does the Mishnah mean when it says that you make the one who bid 10 pay? There is only the one bidder who paid 10. So then in that case, so therefore the Mishnah should be using the expression, they make him pay. Him meaning the only bidder. There was only one bidder of 10. Because according to Rav Chisda, if there were two bidders, there was a bidder of 10 and a bidder of 20, then the bidder of 20 is not only paying the 10 difference between his bid and the previous one, he's also sharing in paying some of the bid below him, according to Rav Chisda's logic. But if we're saying that we're talking about there was only, so it can't be we're talking about that, and it can't be we're talking about there was only one bidder who bid 10, because in that case, the expression in the Mishnah shouldn't be Nefroin Mishal Esther, it should just be Nefroin Vimenu. So what are you talking about? So we'll continue tomorrow about Hashem, and we'll finish that discussion and then continue with these dinim.
Okay.
Hey, Shikayach.
Thank you both for joining. See you tomorrow about Hashem.